Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025.
Today, review for the midterm exam. I'll go through the numbers because that's part of a review. I also have a few minutes with a guest speaker about markets, just to help you understand important aspects of markets, which should help you with your midterm. Maybe it will, but the guest speaker will be here in just a little bit. And before that, we're going to have a quick look at the numbers. And as you can see, we definitely have a bull day going on. Well, I shouldn't say that. The Dow is just in a kind of a grouchy mood. It's nothing really down very much, but negative 0.16, but that happens. The S&P 500 is having a strong day, and as you can see, it's pushing upward. It didn't just rise and then flatten out. It's still pushing upward. So there's a cycle of good news kind of rippling through over and over again, pushing the Dow up, rather the S&P 500 up, about 0.42%. Not spectacular, but decent. And the NASDAQ is actually pulling. We're past the halfway point in the day, but it's up there 0.85%. So good news on there. Definitely, at least part of the market is bullish today, and that's sort of the context of the guest speaker that I'll have here for just a few minutes. And, of course, on the other side of the world, we should go. Now, oddly, the Nikkei is up, but the Hang Seng is down. That's one of the first days that's been down in some time. But it looks like sort of a market, something happened early on. You can see that drop off right there. And then it sort of flattened out after some bad news hit the market. But the Nikkei, just a slow rise through the day. And then over in Europe, it had a kind of a sour day, it looks like. Even, how was London doing? London started out bad, went good, and then it went bad again. I'm not sure what that was about. There's kind of rumors that Great Britain is possibly moving toward a mild recession, but that might be what's causing this sort of bearish sentiment to keep trying to grab a hold over there. But now here's where it gets kind of interesting, is that we are now at the oil just plowing down, and you can now see gasoline prices have definitely gotten down. I saw some over the weekend below $3 a gallon, as I told you would happen. It still has some room to go down as long as these oil prices stay where they are. But here's the scary one, gold. It's now within fewer than $18 of that $4,000 an ounce mark. You've been seeing this happening through this semester. As I told you, if it keeps pushing up like this, that is a very bad long-term sign. That and that badly inverted yield curve are pointing to down the road a dark time in the next 6 to 12 months. Now, the traders from day to day, they trade on what information is right there in front of them, so they can have a very strong bullish sentiment because they don't care what happens down the road, 12 months. They're looking at just the immediate situation. That's why stocks can be overvalued or undervalued relative to intrinsic value, just because of that problem that their problem is making money for the day, not for the long haul in the trading pits, virtual or physical or whatever they are. And if we look at the sector map, we're still green, more green than red in the sector map. Not quite as green as we were last week, but there's still a technology sector, it's just going to stay green. I don't foresee that sector going bearish anytime in the near future. There's just too many possible avenues for making money out there in the technology sector. Financial services have been dark for some time now. Nothing major, but it's still something of a concern. Healthcare, I've heard, is the sector is bearish simply because of the disappearance of a lot of the insurance, healthcare insurance, that was getting people to go to doctors, go to hospitals. That's gone now for more than 10 million Americans. And there are also health insurance premiums for those who still have health insurance are on the rise. And so that's going to cause a lot more people not to get covered. And so the healthcare sector is reacting to expectations that it is going to be a bad time for hospitals, for medical services, and all of that over the coming years. So there is a bearish sentiment there. But overall, the market does have its issues. But for the most part, if you look at these, the short-run trends are pointing toward a bull market. As you can see, you've got one day after another looking at the S&P 500. Just looking at it on a, maybe a one-year basis. You can see that over about halfway through, it has just been climbing and climbing and climbing. That's bullish sentiment. It just is not going to be put down, this sense that at least in the short run, everything is just fine in the markets. And as a matter of fact, that's what I think the my speaker today is going to talk about, is just that, the bullish nature of the markets. Give me a second. I'm going to see if the my speaker has arrived yet. Now remember, listen for me to say, there is no such thing as a bull. And then you come quietly in behind me.
Once you say it,
there's no. Hi, I'm a bull. And Professor Kring asked me to come here today to speak to you about bull markets. Now, a bull market means that stock prices are going up, and they're going up well over sector after sector. Now, the best way you can see that is obviously the Standard & Poor's 500. Professor Kring said that he was going to show you how the S&P 500 had been bullish for at least 6 months. Now, here's the secret. There's no such thing as a bear. Bear markets really don't exist. It's just something that was explained to people a long time ago as an explanation for slight downturns, but the bear market does not exist. In fact, I've never even seen a bear myself. I don't believe that bears exist. There is no such thing as a bear market ever, anywhere, ever. Moo? There's a bear! Holy milkshake! No! Get away from me! No! Moo! No, no, go, get it, go, go. My hair! Okay, let's review. The midterm exam. You can have a note card front and back, 4x6. You can also print out, if you want that, financial analysis formulas sheet. Now, I won't have you do any actual calculations of ratios, but it's good to have it because I might ask you, well, what does this ratio mean? And you could look at it and see how the formula works, and that might be good for you. You can have printed notes, not on your computer. You have to print them out or write out on your note card. You can't have it on your the printed card on your computer. Just make sure that it's something you physically have written by hand or typed up and then photo reduced. Some people actually type up a note card on a regular sheet of paper on a word processor, and then they reduce it down in size to 4x6 to print it. So that's certainly acceptable too if you want to do it that way. You can have a calculator, a physical calculator, if you want. It might be for a holding period return problem. That might be something that would be worth your while to keep an eye on. Okay, now the structure of the exam, you'll have those quantitative questions. You've seen them on the quiz 4. You also saw them on the quiz 3, I think it was. Just present value of an annuity, present value of a lump sum, future value of an annuity, future value of a lump sum. Also calculate a loan payment. You'll also, another calculation, you'll do a holding period return, an HPR problem. You can use that spreadsheet for HPR, holding period return, if you want. Some people would prefer to do it by hand. And the only other quantitative problem on the exam is finding one of those one-year T-bill yields. All you do is you just take the interest divided by the price that you paid for it, minus one. And that one is run it through on your a calculator. You can do it that way if you want. That's the extent of the actual physical quantitative problems that you would do a calculation. And I will have the download link for the present and future values Excel sheet and the holding period return Excel sheet right there baked onto the top of the at the header of the exam. So you could download them before you can bring your own, have them ready on your computer, or you can just download them at the beginning of the test. You have the entire 75 minutes for the test. The test is those numbers questions, multiple choice, true and false, a few fill in the blank, and matching. Now the matching, let me start there. The matching is just words and terms, and you associate those with, here's an explanation or a definition, you match it to the appropriate word or term. You've seen it before on a quiz, and it's the same thing. Usually those are high point winners for the students, and I think there's about 30 points worth of just plain old matching, and so that is a big boost to you as you're going along. Let me get to details, and when I'm finished telling you what I want you to study, then for your study guide, then you can ask me questions. Moving along, I anticipate, by the way, I do copy and paste questions from quizzes onto exams, so I want to make sure that you know that. In other words, if it's an important objective of the course, well, I quizzed you on it. Now I'll see if you've improved in your answering on it and all that kind of stuff. So there are some of those. Questions like liquidity and other money markets versus capital markets and all of that. I will ask you again, but let me go through some more some other specifics here. Make sure you know from the early part of the course the structure of businesses types, sole proprietorships, partnerships, corporations. what distinguishes them from each other? Specifically, what is special about a corporation? I asked this early on a quiz, and I'll revisit it here. First day, second day. I brought up, started bringing up terminology very early in the course. I expect you to know that terminology now. Efficiency, dynamic versus static, all of that. Hang on here. Yeah, once I didn't realize I had the exam on the overhead. And boy, were people writing fast. I didn't realize. Okay. Know the distinctions of markets. Money market versus capital market. Primary versus secondary. Financial versus physical. Forward versus spot. Make sure you know those. Now this is kind of back and forth. I'm just following the order of questions here. I'm literally looking at it, telling you what I want you to know. Now it won't be everything, obviously, but I will try to get you as much study meat that is relevant as possible. Make sure you know the structure of an interest rate. What's in the risk-free rate? What is in the risk premium? I could describe a type of borrowing or debt and ask you to identify what parts of the risk premium would be big and what parts would be small. As far as financial statements go, I don't probe too much into the nitty-gritty details of financial statements. You know what they are. You might want to know which one you would look to get some piece of information. What SEC form would you go for to get financial statements? What would some of the other forms? There's 10-Ks, 10-Qs, 8-Ks. What is special about them? What would you be getting if you looked at one? Nothing major, but just a broad contour of what is being delivered in these statements. As far as ratios are concerned, I might ask you, okay, you've got, let's say, your profitability ratios. Mm-hmm. Which one is the biggest? Which one's the smallest in a certain set? So which would be bigger, gross margin or net margin? ROA or ROE? If it's kind of a mystery to you, look at the formula sheet. Look at what's on the numerator, what's in the denominator. That will guide you as to which one would be bigger or smaller within a certain group. And again, I can't emphasize, I'm just looking at this. I see two in a row there that I copied from quizzes and pasted into the exam. So go through those quizzes. Just know what is the right answer. And that will do you easily 10, 12 points right there, just remembering what the right answer is. And I, again, let me reemphasize, no definitions of different things. I've given you at this point in the course approximately 120 words or terms that have special meaning to us. Some of them are very common terms. They just mean something pretty specific in finance, as opposed to out there in the common language. Concepts, there were some lists where, if you go in your notes, you'll see some things where I put a word or term and then I gave a list of underneath it. Like, for example, financial intermediation. There's a definition for it, but there's also a list associated with it. Make sure you know those details that are inside, that are the manifest of the definition. As far as, I will give you a stock screen. Now, in the question pool I've created for that, all of them were as of this weekend. So there, it's fresh data. I'm going to ask you questions like, okay, is this risky or not risky? What is it? Undervalued, overvalued, that kind of thing. Make sure you know what the bid and the ask mean, because I would probably hit you with something about that on from the stock screen. Know the relationship between yield and price. The relationship between risk and return. In the course of, over the last weeks, I have, in some lectures, I have given you an example of a concept or a definition or a term. And I may say, okay, what was the company that I gave the example for this concept? What company was it that I showed as an example? Now, as far as the last chapter on bonds, I will not do anything that would be a math calculation. It would be more something along the line in bonds of collateralized bonds versus non-collateralized. What do we call collateralized bonds? What do we call non-collateralized bonds? What do you call it if a bond can be turned into stock? A few questions, on annuities, lump sums. I use some special terminology: ordinary annuity, annuity due, perpetuity, those kinds of terms. Just make sure you know what they are as far as is sort of a loose definition. Okay, an annuity due is one where an annuity where the payments are at the beginning. An ordinary annuity is one at the end. A level annuity versus a non-level annuity. Those kinds of things. Periodic versus non-periodic annuities. Just make sure that you know what those mean. That's different from calculating, it's just definitional. I've used some terminology in the class that you might want to keep an eye on. When I'm showing the screens, I will throw up, okay, this is an index, this is an ETF. We go long. What does that mean, to go long? What's a round lot? What do I mean by the mark? In case you don't remember that one, that's the midpoint between the bid and the ask. And I won't go heavy on those, but I will bring up a few terms that are very common in our world, in my world. And so if you start deciding that you want to trade, it's better if you know the right terminology, how to use the lingo of our business. As far as current events go, I mean, I've talked to you and I've shown you yield curves. What's going on right now? I've been showing you the price of oil. I'm certainly not going to ask you for this a specific price, but I'm going to ask you about what are the current trends. Gold is another one. I've mentioned these in class almost every day to get you used to the flow, so that you can step into the flow of the river of finance from where we are now going forward. Give me a second here. I'm looking at something. Know the relationship between liquidity and expected return. Make sure you know that. And in that same regard, again, obviously, I've tried twice now. I'm going to see if I can get you to answer, every one of you, the right answer for liquidity. Because it's a chat trap, for the most part. Chats will give you the wrong answer. In this test, there are 5 chat traps. And so that flags that a ChatGPT was being used. So there are 5 of them. You've got the right answer, and a chat will give you almost every time the wrong answer, whether it's ChatGPT, Copilot, Gemini, or one of the others. They all run to Wikipedia for answers, and Wikipedia is a cesspool of misinformation and incomplete information. I talked a little about stock, and so make sure that you understand what I mean by stock and how is that different from bonds, which market is larger. What do I mean by, what rights do stockholders have? What rights do bondholders have? What are the parts of a bond? The moving parts, the coupon, the face value, callability, putability. I'm not going to push those. Like I said in the lecture, callability and putability are kind of subtle concepts. You have to think for a while to get those, so I won't ask you directly, well, what is a callable bond or what is a puttable bond? Let me check something here. As far as looking at screens, I know what I'm, what I, if I want to know what the risk is, what do I look for? If I want to know what the valuation is, what do I look for? What do I mean by market cap? And just to say that one again, it's the price per share times the number of shares outstanding. It tells us how large a company is. And I, of course, I did focus on bid and ask, so you probably would see something about those. Obviously, I'm going to probe that in the screens question, but I may ask it again in some fashion outside of the screens question. As far as debt is concerned, make sure you know the difference among a bill, a note, and a bond. What are the different names for the lender? What are the different names for the borrower? Remember that a lender is technically an investor. A lender is the buyer of a debt paper. The borrower is the seller of a debt paper. The borrower is the issuer of the debt paper. So make sure you know that, because there's one, I think I did it on one of the quizzes, where I described a situation where someone lent someone money and something like that. And so who was what in that transaction in technical terms? And again, bill, note, bond. You might be asked, okay, is this a bill, a note, or a bond? Something like that. Like when you get a car loan, technically that's a note because it's between 1 and 15 years. Home loans are generally bonds. Oh, know the difference between, and I've harped on this a couple of times, know the differences between accounting and finance. Is finance just part of accounting? No, don't do that. Don't answer the wrong way on that one. But, okay, what are costs that accountants care about that finance analysts don't care about? What are costs that accountants don't recognize that are absolutely critical in finance? Just to sharpen and make sure that you do understand that we are not accountants and we don't teach accounting in finance. Let me look at something real quick here. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Just to give you a detail, there are 12 matching, just to give you an idea of how far I can go in that section. And of course, that's some good points. If you can just do the matching, and some of these, at least, you've seen in quizzes before. Like I said, those quizzes are one of the ways that I prep you up so that you can get a better score on the midterm. Even if you don't get it right on the quiz, you know what the right answer is when you get to the midterm. And so I just test you again on it. Now, overall, And this is overall, this test has approximately 44 questions. But remember, that's the matching is not counted, each one of them. That's just the matching is one of the 40 or so that are on the exam. You have the full 75 minutes. You have about 1.5 to 2 minutes per problem. Last thing I will tell you is the way I structure exams. There are three levels of question. The first level are easy. There should be no problem whatsoever. They are about half, maybe more than half of all the questions are level one, easy. Level two, you have to know more to get those. And those constitute another 35-40%. Level three are more challenging, and you get a few of those and all the others, and you can get an A. But those are the top level, and there are not many of those. When you hit one of those, if it stops you in your tracks, walk around it. Don't grind up time on something that you could have used the time better to get some of the level one and two done. Just work it that way. Now, some students go right to the quantitative problems first. They just clear those out. Good on you. If that's your way of doing it, outstanding. If you want to do it, leaving that for last, that's good. That's good too. On the exam. Now it's your turn. Ask me questions. What do you got? Yeah. Say that, this review.
Yeah.
It'll be up. I usually have them published by 6 o'clock. And then Apple iTunes picks their spiders pick them up within sometimes seconds. So you can listen to it either place. And other podcasting services like Google's picks it up within a few hours. But almost always by 6 o'clock. Well, yeah.
For all the questions, like all the quizzes, like all the correct answers.
They are now. Now there was one, Canvas did a wrong answer on that last quiz for one of the present value, I think it was. So I went back in and I corrected. If you got the right answer, but it marked you wrong, if you see that you got the credit for it, I went back in and gave you the credit. I think the Canvas said the answer was 69,000 and it was actually something like 70,000. So just make sure you notice, even if you got it wrong, just make sure that you didn't get credit for it anyway. But yeah, they're all up. They should be all up now. Yeah.
Like for the annuity versus lump sum, what is like your what would you say is the easiest way?
I'll tell you right now again, and let me repeat this. I'm glad you bring that. The first dead giveaway is that if it's a present value of a lump sum, I'll say, what is the present value? If it's a future value of an annuity, the very first thing I'll say is starting today. You know damn well what it is. Oh, he's sending me a signal that he wants a present future value of an annuity. Now, I've had this question a couple of times, and I kind of get it. With future value of annuity, the last part of it is, how much will you have in the bank 3 months from your last deposit? Or how much will be in the account a year after your last deposit? Don't sweat that. That's just how future value formulas work. They tell you the future value 1 period after your last deposit. Don't get confused by that. It's just what the formula is giving you. It's still just use your future value formula to do it. But if it's a future value of any kind, how much will be there in the future? You'll see something about an unknown amount in the future. And if it's a present value, it's almost natural for me to ask, what is the present value, or what is the value today? The question will be about now. And I will try to finish it off by letting you know I want a number that is for now. I think that's probably the hardest part of those problems. I mean, just punching in the numbers is easy. It's just knowing which one of those panels you should use that kind of catches you sometimes. Good question. Any other questions? The quiz will start at 2 p.m. on the button on Monday. Before you go, I would ask you if for your attendance radar to mark your attendance. Get your attendance marked in, and then you're done for the day. That's all I have for you. I thank you.